Ahoy, Vachon. How's the French say, Vachon? This is the Brown Briefly, where less is more, more or less, coming to you live over KVSH 101.9 FM, Voice of Vachon, your island connection. Please make us part of your day. And be advised that our assertions and views, which can modestly be described as progressive persuasion, do not in any way reflect the opinions of KVSH or Voice of Vachon.
That was the voice of Brian Brown, creator of the Brown Briefly. Every week we try to live up to his high standards of hosting a discussion of current events laced with empathy, intelligence, we hope, humor, and progressive persuasion. Although Brian's concept was less is more, more or less, in reality, you could never have enough of Brian's magic in your life, and we all miss his presence. Today, Truman O'Brien is guiding us from the Voice of Vachon, Gene Bosch Broadcast Studio in bustling and bodacious downtown Vachon, and joining Truman is Craig Bellis, Truman's wingman, and zooming in from his home is Kevin Jones, and I'm Bruce Hallman, zooming in from my home. And joining us today is Emily Scott, director of the Vachon Food Bank. Welcome, Emily.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, good to have you here. So in our sort of weekly process, what we start usually with is sort of what's going on in our Vachon world. So, Kevin, what's happening with you this week?
This is a busy week for the election focus, which is a big part of Indivisible's efforts. We have co-founder Ezra Levin visiting in the Northwest and by Zoom, by town hall. And then in a couple of weeks, Ezra will be here for an actual canvassing event out in the 8th Congressional District to reelect Dr. Kim Schreier. So lots of buzz with the founder of Indivisible coming out to visit us.
Fantastic. Interesting. So, Craig, what's up with you?
Nothing so noble. I'm trying to enjoy the last breaths of summer, having people over for, you know, quick barbecue. Well, barbecues, I guess. Trying to enjoy the outside while we still can. Also getting ready for Truman and I are going to go up to the north part of Puget Sound to an airport to get our new propeller balanced. That's an important thing.
You bet.
Oh, that's about it.
Well, sounds good. Although you know that barbecue is sort of the last remaining element of toxic masculinity, don't write it.
I know, that's the old saw, but you know, my wife prepares everything, cuts everything. I throw it on the grill for, you know, 5 minutes, and then I take credit.
Yeah,
take care, exactly.
maybe you could go to stir fryer. You know, so we've got to what options do we have? We need to find those options.
That's right.
Emily, what's up with you?
There's kind of never a dull moment around here these days at the food bank. So we this week have our annual staff in service. So we're closed for grocery distribution, which is the only time throughout the year that it happens. We've actually only been doing that since 2020, when we, you know, by this time in the year in 2020, we're like, we needed to take a break here and really think about what projects we've been missing while we're hustling to do the kind of the theatrics of putting on, you know, food bank service on a weekly basis. So staff are working on, you know, side projects and kind of cleaning up the grounds and doing stuff that's hard to find time for otherwise. And a whole handful of us are also going to a conference in Bremerton from Wednesday through Friday. So the Washington Food Coalition is a statewide just kind of food and, you know, food assistance advocacy group. So there'll be a lot of really great workshops on best practices in food banking and kind of the future of, you know, government support and meal programs and all that stuff. And on a personal note, I'm going on a very brief but exciting trip on the Clipper up to Victoria with my family this weekend. So I'm looking forward to that as well.
The old adage that life gets in the way of living. You know, sometimes it's important to take that step back and sort of look at the big picture and to take time for yourself and your family. So very impressive. So, Truman, what's up with you?
Well, a couple of things. And talking about Sunrise Ridge, the Voice of Vashon tech team went up in our projects group, installed a new microwave antenna on our antenna pole up there, and it unfortunately we didn't get quite the results that we wanted, so we're going to have to go back to the drawing boards on that. But on a personal note, yesterday was both the most exciting, hectic, and fulfilling day at my house. It's the day that the hay comes for the horses. And believe me, the time leading up to that is pretty darn crazy. And then when it happens, it's just this mad, you know, moving of all this hay. And when it's all over, it's like, finally. So anyway, that happened yesterday. Oh, and we did get the the semi truck and trailer stuck at my house, and my wonderful neighbor Andy Palmer came over with his huge excavator, which my wife called Godzilla, and actually picked up the trailer and moved it and pulled the thing out of the ditch. So that was kind of a climactic end to the day. Craig?
Yeah, I'd be remiss if I didn't also mention we got our hay on Saturday, so we had that same thing going on at our house trying to move things around. But I'd really be remiss if I had forgotten to mention that I went to the 10-year anniversary gathering of the staff and boards of the Dove Project.
Oh, man.
That was held on Sunday. I was on the original Dove Project board, and it was great to get together with all those people and reminisce about the progress that's been made with that fabulous organization over the last 10 years.
Cool.
Great. Kevin.
And I just wanted to say that a friend of mine let me know a few weeks ago now that he has an excavator.
Oh.
And that he said, like, if you ever have, you know, anything you might need an excavator for, you know, you got a buddy in this dude. And I think now I have a whole new reason to why I might need an excavator if I ever get a hay truck stuck in my driveway. That's awesome.
Well, listen, this thing, this is a 35-ton machine. It is an enormous, enormous machine. And you could hear it coming from about 3 miles away. It was pretty amazing.
Wow. So I have, like Craig, I've been enjoying the sort of dying days of summer. You know, we've been blessed here with another couple weeks, we hope, before the rains arrive. But also I've been working with a group on the sale of the Portage store.
Oh, so, really?
So the Portage store is on the market, and not only the store, which sits on 1.7 acres, which is the store and then the wetlands, the salt marsh to the north of the store, but also the 1.4 acre parcel to the west, which includes the corner there at Quartermaster Drive and the bulk of the salt marsh are all on the market. And so right now, the Land Trust, Historic Seattle, the Puyallup Tribe, a number of folks, Four Culture, King County, are all sort of in discussions about how a deal can be put together in a reasonable way to acquire that property and to sort of restore the store and to restore the salt marsh and to turn it back into a productive sort of salt marsh. Right now, actually in 1914, it was closed. Well, 1896, it was closed off on the Quartermaster side. 1914, it was closed off on the Tramp Harbor side, except for a culvert at the very north end, which lets very little water in and out. But originally before then, you know, Portage at high tide would be 2 or 3 feet deep, and there would be a fairly free flow of water between Quartermaster Harbor and Tramp Harbor. So so interesting to see how that sort of spins out. Yeah, Kevin, Truman.
I just wonder if the culvert still there?
It is. Yeah. Oh, okay. In fact, if you go in and look at the aerial photos, even if you go on any of the, you know, Redfin or Zillow, any of those, look at the aerials. You can see at the very north end, you can see the alluvial fan.
Oh, okay.
three-part alluvial fan that comes out from that culvert.
Okay.
So it's there, and if you watch the salt marsh, at high tide it fills up. Right. At low tide it drops down a bit, but it's never been what it was at one right. point. Kevin.
Yeah, I just wanted to make a special request that somewhere in all that negotiating, an easement is set aside for return of the exercise bikes, which used to, you know, so just yeah. keep that, if you could keep that in mind, I think people would appreciate it.
Oh, very definitely. Yeah. Yes, yes. A King Karnit County bike park, right?
There you go.
No trails, but bikes.
Bikes, yeah.
Also today, Truman Craig, you guys are interviewing folks from the Vashon Healthcare District this afternoon on Voice of Vashon at 2 p.m. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Yeah, tell us a little bit about what we should expect.
Well, it's only 30 minutes, so we're going to try to pack a lot of information into that time. We've got two commissioners, Eric Prine and Alan Amon, and the superintendent, Eric Jensen, coming in. We're going to be talking about, some of you may have heard there's some discussion about what's going on with CMAR. And maybe if you haven't, you've been, you know, asleep at the wheel. But we're going to be talking about the future of the healthcare district as these three individuals see it, and the future of healthcare generally, as well as what a lot of people are also interested in, the status of the property tax assessments.
Right.
To support the healthcare district. So we've got a lot of territory to cover.
Yeah, I've been actually studying, you know, trying to prep for it. It's a complicated, complex problem. It really is. And it's I don't think we're going to be able to even touch it in 30 minutes, but
no.
We're going to give it our best shot.
Yeah, so. They're just reviewing the legal documents and trying to make sense out of them is tricky.
Yeah. But it is an issue of high importance to everybody on Vashon.
Absolutely.
So it will be an issue we'll come back to and explore, I'm sure, over the next few weeks.
Right.
It seems like a real interesting sort of response from CMAR and from the healthcare district. Mm-hmm. So looking forward to this afternoon with you guys.
Thanks.
So today is a significant day for American democracy. You know, this is the day in 1066 that William, Duke of Normandy, sailed to England and began the Norman conquest. You think, well, what does that have to do with American democracy? Well, as a historian with a long view of things, you know, over 800 years since 1066, what William brought in from Normandy was a much more authoritarian style of monarchy than what had existed in England under the Anglo-Saxons, which had a lot of citizen participation, still a monarchy, but a lot more sort of individual freedoms. That sort of more authoritarian monarchy was adopted by the English, and ultimately King John, who overreached with his authority, led to the Magna Carta, which ultimately led to the Declaration of Independence and the U.S. Constitution. Yeah. So if you can take an 800-year perspective, today's a great day for American democracy.
There you go.
What do you guys think?
Oh.
Too long a perspective?
No. I think that is, I mean, the Magna Carta has always been huge in our history, I think.
Oh, yeah. No question about it. Let's hope that we don't have some major twist or turn in our democracy here in the next several years.
Yeah. And Bruce, after just having recently read some of the history of that time, according to Churchill, I was just amazed at how many civil wars were in court, were part of that history in that time frame, and how really disruptive the whole process of getting government in place and, you know, what we call civilization today, right? Mm-hmm. So it's a phenomenal step in history. The discussion of the Magna Carta was basically the first, as I understand it, the sort of the first documented set of rules of law, right, that were applied.
Yep.
And so it started a lot of different good things that we take for granted today.
Yep,
sure. Sure. And like the old adage about legislation is, if you might love the sausage, but you don't want to see how it was made.
That's right.
So also today is a significant day for the American environmental movement. Rachel Carson published Silent Spring on this day in 1962. So the book often attributed with the beginning of the American modern American environmental movement. Have any of you read Silent Spring?
Yes, I have. And I recall, you know, as a teenager, that whole inspiration of the environmental movement, a buddy and I went to this park, and the borders of the park was this little waterway, and it was full of trash. I mean, all kinds of amazing, you know, tires and all kinds of garbage. So we upon ourselves just started pulling trash out of this ditch and piling it up in the field, not realizing exactly how we're going to get the trash removed from the field to some appropriate disposal site. But fortunately, you know, we had parents.
Also, today is National Forgiveness Day. And when you talk about forgiveness, it's always a question about what are the limits, or are there limits to forgiveness? You know, should we forgive Donald Trump? Should we forgive DeSantis and Abbott for their tricks of transporting illegal immigrants? Are there limits to forgiveness? What do you guys think?
So here's my thought on Donald Trump. I think the guy should be indicted, convicted, and then pardoned. And the reason is because by doing that, you keep the guy out of prison, but you keep him out of politics forever. And that would solve that issue with Donald Trump, or it would silence him, I think. Craig?
I take a little different attitude toward that, or position toward that. I take the position of my granddaughter when she gets in trouble. She's reminded of the trouble she's in, and she goes, "There will be consequences." And there should be consequences. I there is the whole Reconstruction after the Civil War approach, of course, to dealing with schisms in the United States. And there's a difference, though, between treating the supporters of Donald Trump after a potential conviction, which I have actually several bets out on that he will be convicted. But there's a difference between his conviction and lording it over the individuals who supported him. I think that's where the forgiveness has to come in.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Emily.
Yeah, I don't, in kind of less directly political and more theoretical way, thinking about forgiveness both on a personal level and, you know, more broadly, I think it's useful if it helps you as a person move on and do more productive things than hold the grudge. But I don't particularly find value in forgiveness if it's relieving people of the consequences that you all were just talking about.
Very good.
So you can just take that as you will.
Yeah, thanks, Emily. Kevin.
Yes. I'm kind of along with similar lines, I think. I think that forgiveness, when not coupled with remorse, is a false act. Yeah. And the notion that there's a forgiveness of folks who are willing to change their approach, change their behavior, maybe a little repentant about an act or acts that they've performed which have caused injury and harm, I think then forgiveness may indeed be something you would consider. But in the examples that you raise, I don't see the remorse. So I think forgiveness is not appropriate if we don't have that element.
Good point. Good point.
Great. Yeah, good point. Thank you. So let's switch gears a little bit and move into our small talk segment with Emily. Emily, tell us a little bit about yourself, your background, what brought you to the Vashon Food Bank.
Yeah, well, thanks again, you all, for having me. I love the kind of that the dialogue spans from, you know, local food bank to global politics to the Magna Carta, which I haven't thought about in a while, if I'm being honest. So let's see, I found myself on Vashon Island in 2013, spring of 2013, after... no, that's not true. It was 2012, after a 2-year stint in the Peace Corps in West Africa in Senegal. I landed here because, you know, transitioning back to the States after living in Africa for a couple of years is a very confusing experience. And I was like, maybe living on an island and working on a farm, which in this case was Pacific Crest over on Maury Island, you know, that was just a really good landing, a landing pad. I've got a background in sustainable agriculture and environmental studies. And, you know, so, you know, working in agriculture just made a lot of sense. I was an intern at Pacific Crest for about 9 months and decided I wanted to stay on the island for a bit longer. So after leaving the farm, applied for and got the volunteer program manager job at the Vashon Food Bank in early 2013. The organization was a lot different then. It was like, I think, 3 full-time staff members, a totally different grocery distribution model. Equally as important impact, of course, but a very kind of different, in a different stage of growth. So I worked as the volunteer program manager for, let's see, until the fall of 2017. So for about 4.5 years, at which point I left to get my master's in public administration from the UW Evans School of Public Policy and Governance. Literally as I was the same week that I walked graduation for my MPA program, I started as executive director here because Robbie Rohr, my predecessor, retired right in my last term of school. So that was a very exciting week. And then an exciting 6 months thereafter. So that was June of 2019. So I had about 6 months of just regular kind of nonprofit business management. And then shortly thereafter, a global pandemic happened. So all of a sudden, I felt very justified in spending a bunch of money on a degree that's focused on how to, you know, build and implement policy and like equitable governance during times of ambiguity. And all of a sudden we're here as an important institution in a time of just massive anxiety and ambiguity. So not to say we did everything right, but, you know, I felt justified, I guess, in spending money on a on a professional degree. And you know, since then, and we'll talk more about this, but it's been nothing but exciting around here for the past few years. So that's kind of my, you know, relative brief history in a nutshell.
Great. Tell us a little bit about the decision to move the food bank into town and how that went about and what led up to that.
Yeah. Well, that actually, so, you know, there's a lot I could say about that relative to the pandemic in the last couple of years, but that conversation has been going on with our, you know, leadership and board of directors at the food bank for at least a decade. I think recently, you know, with the health center moving and, you know, the food bank talking about moving, I think it's pretty in the public discourse that while Sunrise Ridge is beautiful and has the best view of Mount Rainier on the island, and I would fight anybody over that any day. There's a lot of reasons why for very human focused public services like a health center or a food bank, it doesn't really meet all the marks. Primarily, you know, equitable access. We're about a quarter mile up a hill off the main bus line. You know, and that's not to mention if it's snowing out, even cars can't really get up here. You know, where our ability to interact with the general public and to engage with volunteers and donors and to attract more customers is limited because we're just not visible in, you know, to the public eye. And so that's the big elephant in the room is that, as you all know, with Voice of Vashon and, you know, just folks who've been on the island for a long time, the facilities, the actual structures up here are over 50 years old military buildings, like cinder block. You know, and I've had some very frank conversations with our landlords about like, would we be able to renovate up here? And it's really, you know, the big question marks about what kind of heyday King County would have up here if you started to poke around in the buildings and stuff. There's a lot. I can see Truman nodding his head. There's a lot of constraints up here enough that we knew that we needed to relocate. So over the past, you know, like I said, 10 years, we've looked at different locations. Of course, people have brought up, you know, the K2 building. And, you know, for me, the future of that building could be really bright, but there's just so many, again, big question marks. And there is, although our, you know, we're not having to leave tomorrow, there is a sense of timeliness in our departure here. And, you know, various other sites. Like there was, we've got a really great relationship with Thriftway, the owners of whom also own that piece of land behind the IGA complex where the food bank had a farm for a few years. There was talk of us potentially being able to build there, but it turns out that's mostly wetland. And, you know, there's just an equal number, like in making these kind of big decisions, you know, having to weigh all the like barriers versus benefits. And the one that really has, you know, stood the test of time, and there's been plenty of time to test it, was at the site currently owned by the Vashon United Methodist Church, right uptown across the street from Mika's Kitchen. Mm-hmm. So Paul Mitchell, the former pastor of the Methodist Church, was on the food bank board in around, I believe, 2017 or maybe 2016 to 2018. And as the food bank, you know, has identified all these criteria that I just mentioned, like access, visibility, accessibility in the way of like ADA accessibility, and just anybody with limited transportation being able to get here. Like, so we need a place that's closer to the highway, closer to town, just more accessible on all accounts. And at the same time, the United Methodist Church, built into their mission, is a very kind of community oriented and like engage with our community mindset. So they've got this beautiful and sizable property that's largely underused because, like many congregations in the Pacific Northwest, they're kind of shrinking and new people are kind of like revisiting their strategies about how they want to practice religion. So those two, like their need to use the asset that they have, the property that they have, and our need to find a space that really fits the criteria of their property, it just kind of lined up. So that conversation started while Paul was on our board back in 2018, and then just has progressed since then. It's actually, you know, it took a few steps forward and then the pandemic.
Frozen.
And in the midst of that, we had kind of taken a pause on the conversation of us moving up there for the food bank board in 2021 to do a really comprehensive strategic planning process. So we, with the help of a consulting company in Seattle, actually engaged in various different ways through stakeholder interviews and, you know, customer forums and broad community surveys and all this with about over 200 Islanders, and just gathered input about the role the food bank plays currently and where we have opportunity for growth. And that really reinforced the fact that, you know, first of all, the food bank is seen as a really like well-respected and important institution in the community, and that we have a lot more opportunity to expand our reach, both through different populations that could use help with food who maybe aren't getting it now. For example, you know, the homebound senior population who are on fixed income. I think a lot, you know, there's lots of folks who fit that description on the island, many of whom do use the food bank, but a lot of whom don't. So we realized we both can, there's room for growth in increasing food access and food security on the island, but also for the food bank to play a role in connecting people to other services that are outside of food. And then just very almost conveniently, like serendipitously, after our strategic planning process was done in 2021, we were made aware of a funding opportunity through King County, through the Veterans and Seniors Human Services Levy, to start a pilot community connections program, where we currently have two community resource connectors, both bilingual, who are at fixed locations throughout the week, like here at the food bank on Wednesdays when folks are picking up groceries, and at the Methodist Church, where people can go to just get help, get access to things like SNAP benefits, you know, vouchers to get medical care off island if they need it, connections to other social service agencies that they might not have known how to navigate. So it's not to say the food bank is providing all these services, but we're kind of an avenue for funding to have like physical humans there to help assist people with accessing these services. Mm-hmm. So let's see, talking about us moving uptown, I think being in a more central location with more space for those kind of connecting and collaborative services will, you know, just increase our ability to get people kind of holistically what they need all in one setting.
Great. Truman.
I have a couple of things.
Yeah.
I was involved with the K2 project way back when, and we had offered that a space to the food bank. And at that time, they were very reluctant to come up because of the visibility. And I'm just curious how you feel about that. I mean, they felt like people would be embarrassed to be seen, you know, accessing. And how do you deal with that issue around the Methodist Church area?
Yeah, that's a great question and something that we are very aware of. You know, the customer experience we want to hold in higher regard than really any other stakeholders in this process. So, without being able to speak to the decisions that were made when K2 was offered, because I wasn't in like a real position of leadership at that point. In my way of thinking, so up at the Methodist Church, the way that we'll have access, or the way that customers will have access, will be around the kind of backside of the property, first of all. So the entrance to the food bank will be facing east, facing the Ernesty apartments back there. I guess I failed to mention one really critical element of us moving up there as well, which is the kind of structure of the deal. So we'll be building a new food bank. It's not a warehouse. King County doesn't want us to call it a warehouse. It's a food storage building. And then whereas the conversation started with us just purchasing or renting rather a small amount of space in the adjacent education building, throughout the conversations, it evolved into us purchasing the entire building. So that will be, you know, serve as a food bank office space, but then create more space for those community connections and collaborations with other service agencies that I was talking about. So to your question, Truman, I guess there's a couple different answers. You know, one is that if somebody wants to come on site and shop in person, I think that property affords them opportunity to do it discreetly if they need to. Two, in my thinking, if somebody is right uptown and in a property where there's, you know, there's the churches there, the education building will be full of, you know, all kinds of things somebody could be doing. So the kind of multimodal access that people will have there, it's not just the food bank. You know, you could be coming up to the property for anything. Since the pandemic, our home delivery services, which, you know, pre-pandemic, we're at about 25 to 30 households per week. At peak in the pandemic, we got up to about 175 households per week. Wow. And we remain at about 130 to 135 households per week. So because it's one of those silver linings about the pandemic, because we adjusted our services to align and really increase access for people throughout the pandemic, now we're really confident that we can provide grocery services for people in many different walks of life to kind of meet people where they're at. During that strategic planning process, we also identified a list of, you know, like codified values that we can, you know, use as a lens to analyze all of our programming. And one of those, you know, is dignity and another is choice. So we want to offer people, you know, dignified choice, both in the food they receive and in how they receive it. So my ideal for the new property or the new, you know, programming that will happen on the property is to have kind of a three-tiered grocery service model where somebody could show up on a Wednesday or whatever day we'll be doing grocery service and shop for themselves like a grocery store, you know, just anywhere else you would go, or to show up on a Wednesday and fill out an order form, which is what we do now, and then pass it into the shopping area for a volunteer to pack, or to fill out an order form online, which is also what we do now, and then have volunteers pack that for home delivery. So offering people different, you know, choices in how they receive their groceries also relieves us of the burden of having to, like, filter or screen people for what kind of service they get. We just say, here's how you can get groceries. Which way would you like? And often these days, you know, people are inclined to tell us, like, you know, give their life story and explain to us why they need home delivery. And I think it's really great. We are here to hear people's stories if they want to share, but we often are like, no, we don't need to know. Just, you know, check which box would you like to pick up on one of these days, or would you like us to take it straight to your house? So I think that, you know, and at the same time, there's a lot more advocacy work we can do about reducing the stigma around, you know, receiving food bank services, because we really lean into and believe that, you know, access to nutritious food is a basic human right. So it should not be, shouldn't be compromised. And, you know, we should live in a community that's supportive enough where people shouldn't feel ashamed about going to get some free groceries, because life is really expensive these days. You know?
So the second part that I wanted to ask you about, and that I'm very gratified to hear you say, is I was also involved with the Vashon Community Care Center for a number of years. And one of the issues that we were addressing was the fact that there was not some central clearinghouse, as it were, for services, community services here on the island. And we were trying to be that it was very difficult for us to do that. But that was part of our mission that we tried to establish, was that center. And I'm really gratified to hear you saying that you folks are starting to take on part of that mission. And I really would like to hear more about that. Is that something that you're going to expand, or?
Yeah. Yeah. So in kind of multiple lead in. So during that strategic planning process, we updated our mission to, you know, be to increase the island's food security, and then added on connecting people with the, you know, empowering resources they need to thrive. So, and I do want to put the caveat in there that the food bank, we are very much, I think we're really good at building. Well, we're really good at getting food and giving it to people for free, primarily. And second, I see us as relationship builders. So there's no future in which the food bank is going to, like, be the agency that provides all those services, you know, especially in a small island. I think collaboration is so important. Like, we work really closely with all the members of the Vashon Social Service Network. And we continue to, or we intend to continue that. Right. So the food bank is not trying to do like a services grab, you know.
Right.
But we do, we have built it into our mission. And in this new space, we'll have more flexibility and room for just strengthening collaboration, so that it's easier for like separate agencies to work together, and easier for an individual to walk into one building and have somebody say, here's how you get this, here's how you get this. And like, here's a bank of computers where you can either sit and apply for these yourself, or you can sit here with a community resource connector who can like help you fill out all the applications. And which happens now with that community connections program that I mentioned. Just there are still challenges about like location and, you know, I think it's a really great incremental step that will be even more effective and efficient once we get into that new space up there.
I'm hogging this, but one more thing is that I was working with the very beginnings of the social services network. That VCC was a big portion of that. One of the original instigators, I guess I would say. And one of the things that we discovered was that it was very, very difficult to come up with a central thing that we could all work on. I mean, because none of us were willing to give up some of our autonomy or our sovereignty, as it were, to the group. And yet we really wanted to work together. And the one thing that we found that we could work together on was food, which I think is very interesting that you folks are starting to take over part of that issue. But food was one thing that we could all agree on and could work together on. So,
yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense to me, because food is such a, in so many different ways, is such a uniting and like communal, you know, it brings people together. And I've, you know, we could have a whole separate show about like my thoughts and that I know are shared by other folks in VSSN, but about the future of that, what is currently an informal organization and how it could become more robust and even more effective.
Hey, Kevin.
Kevin, you're muted.
Okay, I found the button. Hey, Emily, glad you mentioned the Vashon Social Services Network. I was doing a little bit of online researching, and I see Vashon Youth and Family Services, VYFS.org/resources. Seems to be the best location. Would you agree that's where people can go to find out more about that? Or is there another place people can find out more about that?
Are you to find it about VYFS or just about like resource connections?
Just the Vashon Social Service Network that you mentioned.
Yeah, so that brings up a bunch of great points. Is that right now the Social Service Network itself does not have like a central holding place,
right. Okay.
But it could. And actually, lots of different organizations, the Food Bank included, to an extent, on their websites have like a resource, you know, directory of sorts where there's links to other organizations. One element of that levy funded community connections program it's a pilot program funded through the end of 2023. One element of that we've had some fits and starts getting going, but we still have high hopes for is a more searchable and kind of interactive directory where that could include kind of regional services and local services. So not just a website through one organization that leads you to another organization's website, but like, you know, say you're looking for food, you type in food and maybe your income and your, you know, just a bunch of different like fields that could help you search for exactly what you need. And then it would tell you exactly how to apply for it, you know, so kind of a more direct line to getting connected. But in lieu of that, a more direct answer to your question, Kevin, VYFS has a great resource directory. And actually, the Vashon Care Network also has a really good resource directory on their website. The challenge there also when each organization has its own, resources for website management and updating is especially in such a dynamic time as right now that, you know, like say food bank programming has changed, but the six different organizations and the social services network, you know, all haven't had the opportunity to update their website. So all of a sudden you're finding different information all over the place. So I think we could really benefit from a central holding ground.
Yeah. Thanks for those resources. That's great.
Yeah.
Greg.
Yeah. Real quick question, Emily. Maybe I missed it at the very beginning, but what's your aspiration in terms of when you are actually going to finalize the move?
Yeah. So I am so excited to say just that has been a question, you know, the entire time. And it's been one of those, I always feel like a politician answering because you're like, maybe this and that. Yeah, but we just signed the long-term lease with VUMC 2 Mondays ago, which was that took a lot of negotiations because it's we wanted to build in a lot of contingencies for each organization and make sure everybody was comfortable with it. And I think we did a really good job of that. So we signed that lease and we're just in contract with an architect firm and some general contractors. And it's looking right now that somewhere around the fourth quarter of 2025. So there's, you know, we've got, you know, at least 2.5, maybe 3 years out from now. Because we, like I mentioned, the whole process involves construction, new construction and building acquisition. And really, as you all know, construction piece, considering current materials and labor shortages and
permitting,
supply chain, blah blah blah. Yeah, permitting. King County is an entity all in and of itself. So you know that timeline could change pretty drastically, but we're not. 2 to 3 years minimum is what we're looking at.
Is it going
to
be a gradual move, or are you going to move portions, or are you just going to do it all at once?
That's also a good question. I would like to do it all at once just because I think that will, it's hard to say. I'd like to, regardless of how that works, to decrease the disruptions in service for folks. The resource connections piece, I think, could happen. Like we could occupy some office space and have, you know, the resource connections happening, because that's really just a matter of like a computer and a person, you know. The food bank, on the other hand, is one of the more physical asset heavy nonprofits on the island, I'd say. You know, we've got, we're probably sitting on, you know, well, let's see, last year we moved over 600,000 pounds of food over the course of the year. Not to say that that's what we have on site at any given moment, but the process of moving the food bank up there will take some time. But that is what I would like to, you know, make sure we can reduce as much as possible the disruptions to people's grocery services. And that said, I think we can find some creative ways if we have to be, closed for a couple of weeks. And